good to go?
Sure.
All right, Mr. Ferguson.
Yes, sir.
You can step to the podium whenever you're ready. And you'll have 15 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
Okay. Duly noted.
May it please the court. My name is Ryan Ferguson. I represent Victoria's Secret, the employer in this workers' compensation case. I'll give your honors a break from the criminal statutes for a while. We asserted several assignments of error in this case. We raised several arguments in our brief, but most of this case, from our perspective, comes down to a single issue, which is the consideration of after-acquired evidence. Specifically in this case, it's medical records that show that just 3 weeks prior to her work-related injury, the claimant was complaining of some of the same symptoms that she complained of after the incident and to which she attributed to the incident. These records show that she was complaining of...
Well, Mr. Ferguson, let me interrupt if I can. Certainly. You know, it seems to me the thrust of our mission with respect to the after-discovered evidence, Summit of Error, deals with the Deputy Commissioner's and the Commission's affirmance of the Deputy Commissioner's conclusion that basically there was a failure of due diligence here in terms of acquiring this after-discovered evidence. And there was apparently a mistake made in terms of when you received the records at some point, I gather from the record. I mean, the Deputy Commissioner indicates that in denying your after-discovered evidence motion, that you received the appropriate records on June 8th, 2016, a week before the June 14th, 2016 hearing, and that apparently is a factual error. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
But it was a factual error that was contributed to by you, wasn't it, or by your client?
I believe that the, and it may be that the facts.
I thought there was a representation made in the motion or something of that nature, but that was the incorrect date that was supplied to the Deputy Commissioner.
If my memory serves, it's that the fax transmittal sheet or perhaps something else indicated a date of June 8th, but we certainly in our motion to reconsider and in our brief to the Commission and in our brief to this Court have stated the facts that are in the record that the documents were received on June 13th. I was actually out of state on vacation at the time, was preparing a motion to reopen the record, and the very next morning, within an hour of the opening of business, we received the Deputy Commissioner's opinion. So there really was a situation of that. And it was certainly after the evidentiary hearing in this case, which I think is the real issue. But Your Honor is correct that the primary issue in dispute here is the due diligence in the
No hearing was held on the after discovery. I mean, basically, this was a proffer that you made through a filing and that the Deputy Commissioner rejected, correct?
Correct.
There was no actual evidence taking where you were permitted to develop when you discovered this and so forth. And
correct.
So forth. Is that correct?
Correct. And the records that we're talking about, quite frankly, taint the entire case. I mean, these are records that show symptoms that were attributed to the accident just 3 weeks prior, symptoms of neurologic abnormality.
Well, whether it ultimately takes the case is not for us. That would be for the Commission to determine. The point here is, I gather your point essentially is, the error was in not allowing you to present this evidence that, you know, the. I mean, hypothetically, we're not the ones that determine whether after discovered evidence would change the result. That would be for the Commission to determine.
Only to the extent that the elements of a consideration for after-acquired evidence include that portion that it not be cumulative and that it should produce an opposite result. I don't think those points are really in dispute here, as Your Honor suggested. It's really a matter of the reasonable diligence in pursuing.
I mean, if we were to agree with you, the remedy would be to remand to the Commission for them to at least consider to hold a hearing to for them to determine whether or not the this evidence would change the result, it seems to me. I don't think it's for us to determine whether it actually would or not. It just, it certainly if accepted by a fact finder, it might very well change the result, but that's not our call to make.
Correct.
Okay.
And in terms of the reasonable diligence argument, we cited the case in our brief. Due diligence is not an absolute standard here. It's not if those records were available to be had, you had to get them. It's consideration of the circumstances and what is reasonable under the circumstances. And the first and foremost of the circumstances that we have to consider here is that the claimant concealed this prior condition from the employer, from her doctors, and from the commission ultimately. In her brief, she seems to suggest that her testimony about prior conditions wasn't misleading or wasn't false, but I think we prepared a nice, concise exhibit, and it was in the appendix, I think, at page 484, highlighting, first in her written discovery responses, where she said, haven't had any prior issues. Then they later supplemented to include an incident in 2010, several years prior, where she fell. But in the responses and at the hearing, she explicitly stated, you know, I had a couple of months of treatment, I was released to work, and I didn't have any further problems after that. Then in her deposition, I asked about symptoms in her back, symptoms in her hip. Had she ever had any radiating pain in her hip before? This was one of the symptoms that she specifically attributed to this accident. And it seemed to speak to some sort of something more than a soft tissue injury. And she said no, flatly no. And those records from beforehand clearly state she is complaining of numbness and tingling in her right hip. When the pain is bad, she's complaining of constant pain. The doctor orders a neurologic test, a nerve conduction study. That's the same test that was conducted after the accident, to which the doctor said, yes, there's evidence of an abnormality here. Well, clearly, that's attributable to the accident because we have no history of prior condition. So he did not make that conclusion based on a complete and accurate medical record. So that's really the first big piece of reasonable diligence here, is that we asked these questions and she specifically told us there's nothing there. So nonetheless, out of an abundance of caution, we are pursuing these records. This is merely one of the medical providers that she identified in her discovery. So it's an out-of-state provider. We asked for a release. I believe the timing is in the record. We asked for the release within a week of this hearing being set. It took several weeks for that release to be returned. I think it was 3 or 4 weeks. We put that in our brief. We immediately turned it around to the provider. We then called the provider multiple times. We sent multiple letters. Those are in the record, requesting these records. But again, it's important to note at that point in time, we are being told by the claimant under oath there is no prior condition. So the commission, I think, criticized the employer for not requesting that the record remain open or requesting a continuance. Well, at that point, and this was my call, I'll fall on the sword on this if I have to, but we did not feel that we had a reasonable basis to ask the court, hold everything, there's records out there that may or may not tell us anything. You know, that's the position we were put in, especially again because we had multiple assurances from the claimant that there was nothing there.
They actually received the records on June 13th, is that correct?
That's correct.
So that was the day before the hearing.
That is correct. We received them the afternoon of the 14th. Not to dwell too much on those details, but I'm at the beach and I get an email from my paralegal saying we've got these records. I prepared a motion that evening that we were going to file with the commission the next day, and the next day is when we received the opinion. But again, the hearing had already happened, so they would be after acquired evidence regardless of that particular timing. The other issue that I'll address briefly, but it all ties in, is the issue of the medical panel in this case. Because once again, this comes down to an issue of reasonableness. The commission and the courts evaluate...
Do we need to address that second issue if we agree with you on the first issue and remand it up, on that basis?
Ultimately, no, but the panel issue underscores the importance of that after acquired evidence. And again, it all ties together because once she sort of went off the grid and got her own medical treatment, we're not controlling the treatment, we're not controlling the flow of information, including the provision of prior medical evidence. And the commission in ruling that this Dr. Sakonowicz has become the treating physician. He is then cloaked with this authority of the treating physician. His opinion is going to be given great weight. And in this case, we had competing evidence from Dr. Ganji, who I've used the word prophetic before, because his report says, you know, there's something funky here because she had a soft tissue injury. That should have resolved, and that did resolve. But she's continuing to complain of these, what's been described as Parkinsonian symptoms, these tremors. And the only objective findings to support that are abnormal findings in a lower extremity nerve conduction study. That is the precise test that was ordered by her doctor before this accident as a result of pre-existing pain, numbness, and tingling. She reported it as constant pain at that point. They also try to say, oh, she mentioned this in passing at this visit. That the record simply contradicts that flatly. She says, I'm complaining of constant pain to the point where she was sent for a nerve. He ordered a nerve conduction study. He prescribed prescription pain medications. So this was by no means a passing reference. This was constant pain for which he determined we needed to diagnose it. We need to look further to see what's going on here. Sure enough, actually, after the accident, the same test is done. The upper extremity nerve conduction study was normal. So the only objective finding of an abnormality is something that had already been requested before the injury as a result of her pre-existing conditions. So all of that goes into this reasonableness standard. Did we pursue these records reasonably? Were we reasonable? Pardon me. Were we reasonable in pursuing these records? We promptly issued the release. We followed up by phone, by letter, all the while being assured, not just assured, being told under oath that there's nothing there to be found. And so it's our practice to continue pursuing those records. And I was quite surprised when I got those records after the fact. We promptly moved to supplement. And as Your Honor points out, there's been no hearing on the circumstances surrounding our receipt of those records. There's been no hearing or consideration regarding the substance of those records. Quite clearly, in our opinion, they would change the result in this case. There are other remedies just in addition, not only changing the minds of the doctors here, but as we've pointed out in several levels of briefing in this case, there are grounds for additional sanctions when a claimant conceals prior medical evidence from the commission. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you. Mr. Childress? Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Kasmer. But I can be Mr. Childress for a little while.
Mr. Kasmer, welcome.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Andrew Kasmer on behalf of the appellee, the claimant in this matter below. This woman was working for Victoria's Secret, fell off a ladder, was sent directly by the employer to a place called Concentra for medical treatment. Concentra then sent her to her primary doctor, with whom she treated for a period of time, after which she was referred to an orthopedist for further follow-up care. This is all borne out by the record. This is all not in contest. During the course of the litigation, there was discovery undertaken, depositions, written discovery, supplements to discovery. At all times, the employer was aware that she had treated with her primary care doctor, by whom they alleged they didn't know about this record that was 3 or 4 weeks prior to the trial. Well, counsel's arguments in brief and here today failed to point out that they knew she had been treating since 2 days after the accident with this very same facility. They had the opportunity to subpoena these records. They didn't. Yes, it's out of state, and you're going to hear it's outside the subpoena power of this court, but that's not the truth either. You can file a miscellaneous petition in Maryland, open a file and subpoena records. Counsel does it all. I do it weekly when you have jurisdictional issues up in the Washington, D.C. area outside of the Virginia court's discretion. You can get those records. They chose not to. They undertook written discovery. Still didn't seek these records. They took the deposition. They can raise issues today about whether they believe she was credible or not credible. I could take the opposite position, but that's not really this court's job to look back on the evidence and decide whether the claimant was credible or not credible. I reviewed the questions. It's in my brief. She's asked certain questions. Had you been injured before? She said no. Counsel then twists that in the argument and says she didn't disclose these conditions. Well, if you read the question was, have you ever had an injury involving your neck? No. Had you ever had an injury involving your back? Yes. She testified at trial about that. Counsel at trial did not take the opportunity to question her about any of these things at trial. Counsel did not take the opportunity during the entire discovery process to subpoena these records. Counsel says that, well, we waited because we didn't.
Well, how about this? I'm looking at the deposition found Joint Appendix page 259. Question, have you ever experienced any numbness or tingling in your extremities before this accident? Answer, no.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Have you ever experienced any type of radiating pain in your back or leg? Answer, no.
Correct.
And the medical records allegedly contradict that.
I disagree. It's not the medical record, Your Honor. It's one record at one time, and the claimant, if she was questioned at trial, which counsel could have done, would have explained, you know, I didn't remember telling the doctor that on that specific day. It's one record, Your Honor. This is not a situation where this person had surgery and had follow-up care for 6 months. This isn't a prior car accident 3 weeks before the accident that she failed to disclose and she had gone to the chiropractor three times a week for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. That's not what we have here. There's one record with a woman who's undergone a very traumatic incident and has been in treatment almost, you know, 2-3 times a week for 6 months at that time. And in the middle of the litigation, she's a litigant. She's not familiar with depositions and discovery. She's asked one question. Have you ever seen a doctor for this before? Her recollection at that point was no. That could have been explored further, pre-trial, not after trial. And, Your Honor, I want to point out something to make sure that we're all on the same page here. The trial in this case was on June 2nd. These records were received by counsel given, I believe him when he says he received them, on June 13th. That's 2 weeks after trial. This case was filed in January, was scheduled the first week in March. The release that counsel mentioned was provided to my office and returned to him by March 21st, almost 3 months prior to trial. So he didn't even need a subpoena. In his records, in his argument, he sets forth that we provided him with that subpoena, with that release on March 21st. That release was available to him on March 21st to request the records without the use of the subpoena. If he had him having chosen not to subpoena the records before then. So between the date he was given the release, March 21st, and June 13th, he didn't receive the records. It's not this court's job to give him a pass, nor was it the court below, either the Deputy Commissioner or the full commission. And that's why Deputy Commissioner Nevin said, you know, the time to bring the court's attention that these records are missing is not 13 days after trial, but sometime during the litigation. You never requested the claimant provide you with anything more than the release. You never told the court you were having problems getting the records. You never mentioned at trial that you wanted to leave the records open because you had requested these records and you had tried multiple times to get them and you're having difficulty. You never asked the court's help in getting those records. You never did anything until after you got the opinion and lost and then turned around and said, oh, wait a minute, we just got some new evidence. We'd like the court to reopen the record. And I raise that not to disparage counsel, but because the law is what we have to follow in this case. And the law says that after discovered evidence can only be made a part of the record with very specific findings. One of them is, number two, could not have been discovered before the hearing through the exercise of due diligence. Well, counsel wants you to say that his actions were reasonable. And with all due respect, I think I've outlined that they weren't reasonable. No subpoena was issued. Despite the claimant voluntarily giving a release for the information that was sought, he didn't do anything. Furthermore, reasonableness was indicate if you thought that you needed those records for trial, you don't wait till after trial to bring that to the court's attention. You had ample opportunity to bring it to the court's attention via a request for a continuance, a request at the trial to leave the record open because you say you still haven't received these records and you consider them important, or at the trial itself, bring it to the court's attention, all these alleged actions that you think you've done to try to get these records and they're not available. But none of that was done. It wasn't only until after the judge issued his opinion that they turn around and say these records are important. Furthermore, prong 4 of the after-discovered evidence rule requires that they must prove that the admission of this evidence would lead to a different result. Not may lead to a different result. Not, well, we want this case remanded so the judge can now reconsider these records and maybe give a different opinion.
Mr. Kasner, isn't it true that the only prong of the after-discovered evidence criteria that was considered by the deputy commissioner, the commissioner was, and the commission as a whole, was the due diligence portion?
I think, Your Honor, that in his letter opinion, that's correct. And I think the full commission did consider all the prongs. But the
that was largely based on the date that was represented that the information was received by Mr.
No, that's why I think you have the timeline a little bit wrong, with all due respect, Your Honor. The evidence was provided after the hearing. It was the only issue about whether the date was wrong.
No, my question goes to what the deputy commissioner's ruling was, and I'm reading, I'll quote it. More than sufficient time was available to obtain the records of Express Healthcare prior to the hearing, and the commission was never aware of any difficulties in receiving said records. No request for continuance was made, and no request was made at the hearing to leave the record open post-hearing for the records. Additionally, you have represented the received the appropriate records on June 8, 2016, more than a week before the June 14, 2016 opinion. That's the pertinent part of the deputy commissioner's ruling, isn't it?
The beginning is the pertinent part. The last thing about the date is, in my opinion, irrelevant, because the hearing was June 2nd. I want to make that clear. The hearing had already passed. Whether he got the records on the 8th or the 13th doesn't matter. It was post-hearing that he got these records. And so the deputy commissioner's opinion is that you didn't do anything before trial to tell me you wanted these records in. You admit that you had been requesting them since March, and now you got them post-hearing. Whether it's the 8th or the 13th is irrelevant. He got the records post-hearing, which should have and could have been obtained before the trial. Am I missing your point?
No, that's fine.
So the due diligence doesn't apply to whether it was on the 8th or the 13th that he made the court aware. The due diligence is that you had all this time before trial. You could have done all these things to get the records. You didn't do it. And now you want us to bail you out because, now there might be some evidence that you feel that we might have considered important. And the might have considered important goes to prong 4, which the full commission did address in its opinion in review of the deputy commissioner's actions, and said, we considered all of it, and we're not going to reverse the deputy commissioner simply on the basis that you found this other evidence that you should have discovered before and didn't, and now it might change the result. That's not really what the after-discovered evidence rule is all about. So unless there's any other further questions, John Wright, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Ferguson, you've got just a little under 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. One characterization that I'd like to address, I think it was said several times that we waited for the deputy commissioner's decision and then decided that these records were important. That is completely contrary to the facts. As soon as I saw these records, and as soon as anyone sees these records, it's clear that they are important to this case. They're critical to this case.
When did you first discover the existence of these records?
We this was a provider that was identified in discovery. We were aware of their existence in March time frame, I believe.
And they were requested?
They were requested in March.
And you had a waiver.
We got a release, which for us, I'm not going to go issue a subpoena if I have the release. That is the authority of the patient telling the provider to give me those records. So for me, that's the avenue that I'm
going to use. So in March, you transmitted that to the provider?
Correct. That's the avenue I'm going to pursue, and that's the avenue I chose to pursue. I didn't get a special commission. I didn't do other sort of what I would consider extraordinary measures under the circumstances when I've got a release from the patient. So I sent it to them. And again, we're getting our staff to follow up. We sent letters, which are in the record cited in our brief. But it cannot be ignored that we're, at that point, triaging. We've got other cases. We've got a lot of records going on in this case. There's a complicated medical issue in this case. We're continuing to pursue those records, but we're again being told that they're not, that there's nothing there.
But it's the records themselves that suggested that the claimant's testimony was not necessarily truthful. Is that correct?
That until we got those records, there wouldn't have been any indication to us that that was untrue.
There would have been no prior indication.
Correct. And again, this issue about asking him for... He said, we didn't tell the commission that we needed a continuance because we considered these records important. That's what he said. How did we know to consider them important at that point? Again, we're doing this out of an abundance of caution because we're being thorough in collecting all these records, but she has told us. And I would simply refer to the...
You didn't recognize the significance of the records until you realized they contradicted her testimony.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, it all comes down to reasonableness. We're not required to use every resource available to us and go to the ends of the earth to find these records, especially when we're being told there's nothing there. I think there was an authority cited that failure to provide known and available records is not good cause. But in this case, we didn't know what was there. We didn't know. In those cases, somebody said, provider, send all those records. I know what's in them. I know what's there. I want them in the court. And they simply failed to ensure that all of that was transmitted. That's not what we have here.
Thank you, counsel. We're going to sit down and greet.